Okay, fine. So let's just start. Sorry about being 2 minutes late. So tonight we are moving on to our next principle, which is the principle of Davar She'eino Miskaven. This is one of the most practical principles out there in many different Shailos in Hilchos Shabbos. So this is the core of the analysis. So let's do this again properly. It'll take 2 or 3 weeks, and we'll go through. Hopefully in 3 weeks, we'll see a lot of fun shilas that come up after we learn through the basic principles. So let's start from the beginning. We begin with the Mishnah and the Gemara in Beitza on Tav Chav Gimel Amaviz. The sugi there in Beitza brings up a very, very famous case, which is the case of Gorer Adam Mita V'Sabso. The situation is where a person wants to drag a chair, some type of item outside on an earthen floor on Shabbos. He just wants to get it to another location. That's why he's doing it. But the issue becomes that when he drags this chair outside in the dirt, so it may create a groove in the ground. Now, if you create a groove in the ground on Shabbos, that fits under the malacha of Choresh. Outdoors, if you do any act of breaking up the ground, that violates the malacha of Choresh. And so the question becomes, is it permissible to drag a bench, drag a chair outside in the dirt, in light of the fact that this may create a groove in the ground? That's the big question that comes up. So we have on this a big time machlokes tanaim between Rabbi Huda versus Rabbi Shimon. Starting with the shita of Rabbi Huda. So Rabbi Huda says that this is aser. We can't permit you to drag this bench. You may end up creating a groove in the ground that violates melechus choresh, and so therefore you have to refrain. It is prohibited. That is the shita of Rabbi Huda, whereas Rabbi Shimon argues, Rabbi Shimon says that this is perfectly permissible. It's mutter to drag the chair outside on Shabbos because you're not having kavana for the consequence of making a groove in the ground. What's my kavana? What's my goal in this situation? I'm just trying to drag the bench to get it to another location. I want to transport it to another place. That's my goal in this case. The fact that it may create a groove in the ground, I'm not having kavana for that secondary effect. And since you're not having kavana for the iser, this is called a davar she'eino miskaven. Davar she'eino miskaven is where you're doing activity A, which in and for itself is permissible, and it may create, it may cause activity B, which is aser. Since you're not having kavana for that secondary effect, it is perfectly permissible. There's no iser whatsoever. And so Rabbi Shimon says it's mutter to drag the bench outside on Shabbos. So that's the famous machlokes between Rabbi Huda versus Shimon on the issue of davar she'eino miskaven. Rabbi Huda holds davar she'eino miskaven is aser. We can't let you do activity A of dragging the bench, lest you come to create a groove in the ground. And Rabbi Shimon holds that davar she'eino miskaven is permissible. Okay. Now, although this original case of this machlokes is discussing Hilchos Shabbos, a case where you potentially violating the Isra Malacha, but actually this machlokes is not limited to Hilchos Shabbos. It applies to all Isurim in the Torah. Any situation where you want to do an act in and for itself is permissible, but it may cause a secondary consequence of Isser. Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Shimon have a machlokes. Is it mutter or is it asur? So just to give one more example of this machlokes, another example where we see this apply elsewhere out of Hilchos Shabbos is the case in the Gemara Pesachim on Chaf Hei Amud Beis. Now, just as a disclaimer, there are a lot of complicated details in that piece of the Gemara. We're just zeroing in on the basic case in the Gemara to give an illustration of how this machlokes can play out in another area in halacha. The case there is like this. Let's say a person wants to walk to a certain destination. This is not on Shabbos. This is during the week. A person wants to walk to a certain destination. But there's a concern that if he walks, he takes a certain route to his destination, he may pass by an area where there's an aroma of Avodah Zarah, that they're burning incense of Avodah Zarah, and he may pass by an area that has an aroma of Avodah Zarah. Now, we know that there's an iser to get any type of benefit, any type of pleasure from Avodah Zarah. So there's a concern, if I do activity A of walking to my destination, I may pass by an aroma of Avodah Zarah, I may smell it and derive benefit, and that would be aser. You can't derive benefit from Avodah Zarah. So is it mutter to walk to my destination in light of the fact that it may cause the secondary consequence of iser? Once again, this is going to be a machlokes to Rabbi Huda versus Rabbi Shimon. According to Rabbi Huda, as we're presenting it in our sugya, this would be prohibited. You cannot do activity A lest you cause activity B. Whereas according to Rabbi Shimon, this is permissible since you're not having kavana but the secondary act of Isser, so it's perfectly mutter to do activity A of walking to your destination. And even if you end up smelling the Avodah Zarah, there's nothing wrong whatsoever. So these are just some examples where we find this big time famous machlokas tanoim on the issue of davar she'eino miskaven. Now, I just want to spend a few moments quickly highlighting the hesber in this machlokas. I'm not giving a deep conceptual hesber, but it'll just set us up for our ensuing analysis in the second part of today's year. So let's just spend a few moments quickly just pinpointing the exact points of contention in this machlokas. If you think about it, so they're actually having a very fundamental machlokas, and that is what it means to violate an isser in the Torah. See, the Torah set up a whole system of isurim, a whole system of prohibitions. What does it take to violate an isser in the Torah? So Rabbi Huda is holding that as long as you do the activity of the avera, that is the violation. The ma'isa avera itself, the act itself, is awesome. So in our case of darash and miskaven, where I want to do activity A, I'm going to drag a bench on Shabbos, and it may cause activity B of making a hole in the ground. If activity B does end up happening, if that groove is made on Shabbos, which is melechas chorish, since you did the act of chorish, that would violate melechas chorish. If activity B takes place, you will have a violation of melechas chorish. So that is the shita of Rabbi Huda, that darash and miskaven is awesome. Moving over to Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon holds that when the Torah set up its system of isurim, so it's not enough to just do the activity. The act itself is not sufficient to violate the isur. There also is another ingredient that's necessary, and that is kavanah. According to Rabbi Shimon, when the Torah said, don't do an isur, the Torah meant, don't do a focused isur. Don't do it with kavanah. Don't do it with focus. If you just do a happenstance isur as a consequence, you didn't mean to do it, that's not usur at all. So if I do activity A, I drag a bench outside, and it may cause activity B of making a charetz. Even though activity B looks like it's usur, I made a hole in the ground, it's perfectly permissible because I'm not having kavanah for it. Although I did the act of plowing, since I didn't have kavanah for it, it's not usur. According to Rabbi Shimon, the isurim in the Torah are only usur when it's a focused act. Not when it's a happenstance, matter of fact, you didn't intend for it to happen. When it's a focused activity, that's the concept of an isur according to Rabbi Shimon. So it's actually a pretty deep philosophical machlokas here as what the Torah meant when it said, you know, thou shalt not. What exactly is the point where you violated that thou shalt not? Okay, so that's just a hesber in this machlokas. Yeah.
Thou shalt do.
So when Penny's asking what thou shalt do, so how does that fit into this machlokas? So you should know that that is might be a consequence of our analysis. We'll have to see when you violate. No, but Mr. Sasei, so usually it's a bittul, Mr. Sasei. So, okay, so that Mr. Srichas Kavanah might be connected. We'll have to see down the road. But for now, you know, when you don't do, when you refrain from doing the Asei, that's where you have the violation. But by the low Sasei, by the don't do's, when do you violate the don't do? That's the fundamental machlokas here. Okay, so this is the big time machlokas Tanam Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Yehuda. And we already have a Gemara in Shabbos and Sadihei and Al, which tells us that the accepted practice is in accordance with Rabbi Shimon. Gemara itself tells us that the accepted practice was like Rabbi Shimon, and this is how we paskin. We paskin that Dabar Shein Miskaven is mutter. And so this is a major, major heter now, halacha. Anytime you want to do a certain act, the in for itself is permissible. And there's a concern, maybe this will cause a secondary act of Isser. If you're not having kavana for the secondary act, it is perfectly permissible. There's nothing wrong whatsoever. So just to give one simple illustration where we apply the heter of Davar Shein Miskaven halacha l'maisa, the one case that comes up, a shaila in the poskim, is it permissible to give an injection on Shabbos? Let's say we have a cholish imbo sakana, a sick person whose life is not on the line, and to treat him properly, so he needs to have a shot, he needs an injection. Is it permissible to give a shot to a cholish imbo sakana? Now, the etzem fact that you're creating a puncture in the person isn't problematic. There's no problem with creating a hole in a person. But the issue becomes that when you give a shot, you may draw blood. You may cause blood to be extracted. Now, if you cause a wound on Shabbos, that fits under the malacha of chabura. Chabura is an iser deraisa on Shabbos, one of the malachos to draw blood. Which of the 39 malachos it fits under is a discussion. But whatever malacha it is, there's an iser deraisa to draw blood on Shabbos. And so the question becomes, can I give an injection in light of the fact that it may cause a wound to be created, it may draw blood? So it says that this Eliezer, that this is perfectly permissible. He brings down some poskim that were hesitant about it, and he says that it's perfectly permissible. This is a davar she'en misgami. I'm doing activity A of giving an injection. Perfectly permissible. There's nothing wrong with giving an injection. There's a possibility that it may draw blood. Maybe it will draw blood. Maybe it won't draw blood. I'm not having kavanah for that secondary effect. I'm not having kavanah to draw blood. I'm actually trying not to draw blood. A good doctor will do his best not to cause blood to come out. So this is a classic davar she'en misgami. Therefore, he says it is perfectly permissible. So that's just one example where this heter plays out. Yeah. So Mordechai already, Kedarka with Goyish is a mechayvin to the rest of the sugya. So let's get there. Okay. Now, it's interesting that Shmuel Kamenetsky brings up the fact that doctors are mayed that every single time a shot is given, and some microscopic level, there's always some type of blood that comes out. So can you really say that this is davar she'en misgavin? So he says that we don't go based on perception. Allah doesn't go based on science. We go based on perception. The perception is that it doesn't always, you know, a blood is not always created. You don't always get a sticker and a band-aid every time you get a shot from your doctor. It depends on how the shot was given. And so therefore, it's a davar she'en misgavin, and it is permissible. Interestingly, Tzitzis Eliezer says that the same analysis of this shayla also is very much relevant to a corollary shayla, and that is like this. Another major shayla comes up in the poskim is it permissible for a child to give an injection to a parent? Let's say we have a parent that needs an...
Because of the blood.
Exactly. Right. That's right. So as Mr. Verstandig is pointing out, so this is not, again, Hilchos Shabbos. During the week, there's an issue to cause a wound to a parent. It's also to draw blood from a parent. And so the question is, let's say we have a parent who is ill and his child is a physician, is a PA, a nurse. And so it's very natural to ask the child to help out the parent. Is it permissible for the child to give an injection to the parent? So now we're entering a different issur, which is the issur of makeh ava'im, that there's an issur to draw blood from the parent. So is it permissible to give an injection to a parent in general? So it says that Tzitzis Eliezer is very much connected to the analysis of Shabbos. This would be a davar she'en misgavin. And so the starting point is that it should be permissible based on our analysis. He does say that there's more complication to the shayla if you look up some of the sources, but this is just the starting point of analyzing that shayla of giving an injection to a parent. So these are just some examples of where we see this major heter play out. La'alacha, it comes up all the time. And these are just some interesting places where we find it. So that is part one to today's shir. We're starting up, kicking off our sugya by laying out this machlokes tanaim on the issue of davar she'en misgavin. The question is, can I do an act which in and for itself is permissible in light of the fact that it may cause a secondary effect of iser? The Rabbi Huda holds that this is aser. The Rabbi Shimon holds that this is mutter. We saw two examples where this comes up. The case of dragging the bench on Shabbos that may cause a groove in the ground. The case of walking to a place that may have an aroma of avodah zarah. And we discussed a little bit of a hezbon in this machlokes. When the Torah set up its system of isurim, did it prohibit just the activity itself, or do you also have to have kavana? It has to be a focused activity. And we pointed out some practical examples of this shaila we passed like Rabbi Shimon. One big example where this comes up is the issue of giving a shot on Shabbos or giving injection to a parent. Okay. Moving over to part two of today's shiur. Now we come over to the famous qualification to the heter of Rabbi Shimon. We pass now like Rabbi Shimon. So for the rest of the sugya, we are working with the Shimon Shito that is mutter to do a davar she'en misgavin. And just to quickly, before I continue on, for the sake of sanity, I just want to clarify the terminology we're going to be using, because it will just go a lot quicker and it'll be a lot easier to understand if we're just on the same page with terminology. So just to reiterate one last time, which will save us a lot of time in the long run, the terms we're using are activity A and activity B. When it comes to davar she'en misgavin, we're always doing an act that in and for itself is permissible. That's my kavanah, to do an act which in and for itself is permissible. I'm calling that activity A. Activity A is what I'm planning on doing, trying to do. And the issue in our sugya is activity A may cause activity B, which is usur. If I do the act of A, which I'm having kavanah for, it may cause activity B, which I'm not having kavanah for. So is that permissible? Is that prohibited? That's the situation we're discussing. So for example, with the chair, activity A is dragging the bench outside. That's my kavanah. That's technically mutter. Activity B is making a hole in the ground. And the question is, can you do activity A in light of the fact that it may cause activity B. So is everyone okay with the terminology here? Okay, not to go back to like algebra and stuff, but we thought we were done with that. But just for the sake of it, it'll just make ourselves a lot easier in the rest of the sukkah. If it's just A and B, A is what you're doing, B you're not having kavanah for, B is what's usher, A is what you're doing. Okay, fine. Fine. So now we come over to the famous qualification to the shita of Rabbi Shimon. And that is the principle of, as Mordechai pointed out, psik resha. Mira tells us in many, many places in Shas that Rabbi Shimon only permits a davrish in miskavin if it's not definitive that activity B is going to take place. When I do activity A, which in and for itself is permissible, and it may cause activity B, it may not cause activity B, that's where davrish in miskavin is permissible. That's where you're allowed to drag the bench. That's where you can walk by the aroma, the potential aroma of Avodah Zarah. But if it's a psik resha, if it's inevitable that every time you do activity A, it's going to cause activity B, then even Rabbi Shimon agrees that it is usher to do activity A. It is prohibited. So just to give one classic example would be, let's say on Shabbos, instead of dragging a light chair outside or a light bench, I want to drag a really, really heavy bed. I want to take a really heavy bed and drag it outside in the soft soil. And so in this situation, it's definitive. It's absolutely certain. If I do activity A of dragging the bench, it's going to cause activity B of making a hole in the ground. In this situation, Reb Shimon is moda that it is absolutely also to do activity A, since it's inevitable that activity B is going to take place. That's the famous qualification of psik resha. And the big question becomes, what is the pshat? What's the lumdis behind this qualification? Why is psik resha awesome? We just got through saying, in part one, what was the basic concept of Reb Shimon Shita? Reb Shimon holds that the Torah's concept of Averas is not just about doing an activity, it's about doing a focused activity, about doing an activity with Kavanah. That's the Torah's concept of an Avera. So when you don't have Kavanah for an Avera, it's perfectly permissible. I'm allowed to drag a chair outside, even though it may cause a groove in the ground, because I'm not having Kavanah for the groove in the ground. I could walk by an aroma of Avodah Zarah, because I'm not having Kavanah to smell the Avodah Zarah. So who cares if it's a psikration? Well, Maisa, I don't have kavanah for activity B. It should be perfectly permissible. That is the major conceptual question on this halach. Are you giving an answer? So let me just set it up and then we'll listen to answers. Now, just to dramatize this question, this question can be dramatized by a Gemara on Kuf Lam and Gimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara on Kuf Lam and Gimel Amud Aleph brings Avaye who had a real havamina that psik resha should be mutter. That just like any other davrish in miskavin is permissible, that anytime I don't have kavana for the secondary effect, I'm allowed to do activity A. So even in a case of psik resha, it should be perfectly permissible to do activity A. Who cares if it's inevitable? I'm not having kavana for the secondary consequence. So Gemara says Abaye actually really thought this lahalacha, but Rava changed his mind, the Gemara says, that Rava proposed this chiddush of psik resha, that really we should not permit a psik resha since it's inevitable that activity A is going to cause activity B, that the act which is mutter, which you're trying to do, is going to cause activity B, which is aser. Therefore, in this case, even Rabbi Shimon would agree, it is prohibited. And Gemara says that after Rava spoke to Abaye, so Abaye changed his mind and he backed out. But it's actually a real bona fide havim. And Gemara says before he spoke to Rava, he actually thought psik resha should be mutter. Because that really is the svar pshuta. Rav Shimon Shita is you have to have kavana. In a case of psik resha, I'm not having kavana for activity B. And so the question is, what's pshat in the maskana? Why is the psik resha going to be us? That's the famous question in the sugi. So the question is, what is the answer? Yonah.
So I mean, maybe it depends how you would define kavana. Like maybe you could say that if you're going to do something that might not produce that result, then you could say, I don't have kavana to produce that result, because the result very well may not happen. And if it doesn't happen, you'll be perfectly happy. If in a case where the result is inevitably going to be the iser, so that may not be the reason that you're doing it, but you have kavana to do this action, which inherently involves carrying out an iser. So it's part and parcel with the action.
Good. Beautiful. So that's exactly what we need to say. We're just going to build off of it. But that's a very beautiful... Good. Okay. So let's build off what's being said here. Beautiful. So the starting point is, what you have to say is that there, al pidin, we treat it like there's kavana in the situation. That because of the fact that it's inevitable that A causes B, even though you're trying to claim you're having kavana on A, but we're going to treat it like you have kavana on B. That has to be the pshat, that since Reb Shimon holds that you need to have kavana for something to be answered, so it must be in the case of psik resha, although you're claiming you're not having kavana, but you really are having kavana. That's what has to be the starting point. But there's a more, Rav Chanan in the Kovet Shirim has a very, very famous analysis of this issue, where he raises the question, but Lamaisa, at the end of the day, what's the pshat? At the end of the day, how are we generating this kavana on activity B in this situation? That's the question that we're gonna that Rav Chanan asks. So we're gonna build off what Yonah and Adam, Avram. Okay, hey, so I apologize. It's only 10 generations away. Not 20. I'm sorry, 20 generations away. Fine. Okay, so we're going to build off of the analysis that was presented. Rav Chanan has a really, really, really famous chakira on this issue. This is literally one of the most famous chakiras in all the Kovet Shirim, all Rav Chanan's pieces. This is like his famous chakira on psik resha. Two approaches. Lamaisa, at the end of the day, how are we creating kavana on activity B when the guy isn't really having kavana on activity B? That's the shaila Rav Chanan is asking. So he has two basic approaches for how to understand how psik resha works. How are we generating kavana on the secondary act in the case of psik resha? The first possibility he proposes is to say that maybe in the case of psik resha, since the person is aware that A always causes B, he's aware that B is definitely going to take place. So even though he's claiming that he's not having kavana for activity B, but deep down there's a certain subliminal, subconscious acceptance that B is going to take place. He's full aware that every time you drag a heavy bench, a hole is created. So whom are you lying to? You're lying to yourself. Deep down, you're aware of the fact that this is definitely going to happen. There's a certain subconscious, subliminal acceptance of activity B taking place, and that's treated as the equivalent of kavana. The fact that the person is aware that activity B is definitely going to happen, there's a certain acceptance, a certain focus on activity B, and therefore, it's asur. Because as we start out from the get-go, what was the basic shita of Shimon? Shimon holds that when the Torah set up its system of Isurim, you can't just do a happenstance Isur. It has to be focused. It has to be a real thought-out, meditated activity. In the case of psik resha, when you know A always causes B, so even though technically you're claiming you're not having kavana for B, but because B always goes with A, so B, there's a certain focus on activity B. You're accepting the fact that B is going to happen. It's not just a haphazard activity. That fits under Reb Shimon's concept of Isur. So that's the first side in Reb Chanan's Chakira, that maybe we carry over the Kavana from A onto B. Since you are aware of the fact that A always causes B, and deep down you know that B goes with A, so deep down there's a certain subconscious acceptance that B is going to take place, and you're having Kavana for B. That's the first side in his Chakira. The second side in his Chakira is to say like this, that maybe we're not going to be psychologists here. We're not going to start doing a psychoanalysis and getting this guy on a big couch, charging him a lot of money for, whatever, to figure out what his problem, what's really going on in his head. But the nice of the guy is claiming he's not having kavana on B, and we believe him. He's not having kavana on B. I'm doing A. I have a simcha. I need to transport my heavy bed to over there for my simcha. I really don't, I'll take a shvua, so to speak, that I'm not trying to make a hole in the ground. I'd be perfectly happy if this hole wasn't created. We're not claiming that he has kavana on B. So this is now the second time in this chakir, that we're not saying any subliminal types of, intents on B. There's no kavana at all on B. I'm just having kavana on A. So why is psik resha asur? Why is it prohibited to drag this heavy bench if I'm not having kavana to make the hole in the ground? So the second side is to say something that is super duper sophisticated. And we're going to see that there are tremendous amounts of halach lamais nafkaminas over the ensuing weeks. Mitzvah Shem, in 2 weeks, we're going to go through some cool shilas that came up in the postkin that are like really innovative shilas that are totally on this chakira. But we first have to just do the groundwork before we're ready to get to the fun stuff. So the second side he says is like this. So once again, there's no kavana on B. The person's not trying to do B, he's just trying to do A. So why is B also? Why is it also to do activity A? Why can't I drag this heavy, heavy table outside? So says Rav Chanan that maybe since A always causes B, so al pidin, A and B are no longer considered to be separate activities. They're considered to be the exact same activity. If A always causes B, then A equals B. If every single time I drag a heavy table outside, I make a groove in the ground, then dragging a heavy table is the exact same as an act of making a groove in the ground. There's no A and B. It's one big act of AB. It's the exact same thing. They're synonyms. If A always causes B, then A equals B. So if I have a kavana on A, I'm having kavana to drag a really heavy table outside. I'm having kavana to make a hole because B is included in A. A is always causes B. A equals B. When I have kavana on A, B is included in A. So taking a step back, it's very sophisticated. So let's just repeat ourselves again on this chakira of Rohanan. Question is, why is psik resha aser? Reb Shimon has this idea that when you do an avera in the Torah, it has to be done with kavana. It can't be done without kavana. And in a case of a davar shemiskai, I mean, typically it's going to be permissible. But in a case of psik resha, it's aser. I can't do activity A. I can't drag a heavy bench when it's always, always, always going to cause activity B of making groove in the ground. Question is, what's the pshat? I didn't have kavana on activity B. I'm not satisfying Reb Shimon's concept of an avera. So you have to say that there is kavana in this case of psik resha. Because it's inevitable, there's kavana. The question is, why is there kavana? Where's the kavana coming from? So the first thought in the chakira is to say that since the person is aware, in his mind, he knows that A always causes B. So deep down on some subliminal level, he's accepting the fact that B take place. He's having a certain subconscious intention to do B. He's aware of it. He's accepting of it. So that's considered to be an intention on B. That's the first side in the chakira. Second side is to say that we're not going into his psychology and saying that there's a subliminal intention on B. He's not intending on B technically. He's just having kavana for A to drag a heavy bench. But since A always causes B, so then B is included in A. They're the exact same activity. There's no two acts and act A is causing act B. A and B are the exact same thing because A always causes B. So every time I drag a heavy bench, I make a hole in the ground, then dragging a heavy bench is called making a hole in the ground. When I have kavana on A, that's automatically kavana on B because B is included in A. So that is Wilchanan's famous chakira. And over the next 2 or 3 weeks, we're going to see nafkaminas in this chakira. And as I say, ultimately, we're going to see big time innovative shilas are going to be telling on this chakira. But let's just work through do the groundwork, and then we'll see where this chakira heads. Daniel.
Yeah. Lafitte said the first side in the chakira. One exception that seems to come out of that is that we can imagine a scenario. I don't know what exactly that might be. We can imagine a scenario where the actor has no idea of the inevitable consequence, yet an inevitable consequence objectively is possible to be had. If we could imagine such a case, what would the first side say? And if that's so, that he would still say, he would say that that's, you know, that's mutter, or for whatever reason, it seems to be a little bit far-fetched especially in light of the what seems to be more reasonable in side B.
Okay. So if I'm understanding Daniel's question correctly, he's asking, what if you have a case, the person is totally unaware that B is going to take place. He's not aware of the fact that B is going to take place. Is that your question?
Because the way you described it was that there's a subconscious, or meaning, let's say the classic example, psik resha, is the guy chops off the head for his son, right? He knows the thing's going to die, but that even though that's not his tenth, the fact that he knows that is enough to say that that's a real mice, right? So, but what if I can't think of an example, but what if we can imagine an example where the actor doesn't know that this consequence would happen?
I'll give you an example. Let's say we didn't turn off the light in a fridge. We forgot to turn off the light before Shabbos in a fridge. And I asked my dear friend to open the fridge. And he's not aware that doing activity A of opening the fridge is going to cause activity B of turning the light on. So would that be an example of your point?
I guess so, sure. But I feel like
we're gonna do an analysis of this Shaila Mirtz Hashem in a few weeks.
Okay.
The cons of Ms. Asay.
Right, okay, fine.
That's a good point. Yeah. Okay, that's a good point. So in a few weeks, we're going to get to this Shaila. This gets into what's called Mis'asik, do something without awareness. So how does Halacha classify that? Okay, fine. But for our purposes, this is Ruchan's Chakira. And for tonight, we'll finish it off with the famous Nafkamina that Ruchan proposes in this Chakira. The Nafkamina that he wants to suggest would depend on this Chakira is the issue of Psik Resha de Lo Nichalet. So what does psik resha lo nichalet mean? The question is like this. Let's say we have a case of psik resha, that I want to do activity A, which is mutter, but it's going to definitely cause activity B, which is usr, B, which is usr. But let's say I don't want activity B to take place. I'm displeased by the fact that, activity B. So this is what's called a psik resha delo nichale. It's inevitable that B is going to take place, but I'm not happy about the consequences. What's the halacha in this situation? When we say that psik resha is usr, are we even saying a psik resha delo nichale is usr? Or perhaps psik resha is only usr when you're happy, when you're pleased with a secondary consequence. But if you're displeased, maybe it's going to be different. So this is a major, major shaila in the poskim, which we're going to see has huge ramifications on halacha. So let's go through the machlokas, plug it into the chakira, and with the last few minutes, maybe we'll hop in a shaila or two in this issue. So we have in this a big time machlokas from the Aruch versus Tosfos as to what's the halacha with the psik resha delo nichal. Starting with the shita of the Aruch, the Aruch says that a psik resha delo nichle is perfectly motor lechatchila. That if I'm going to do activity A, and it's going to definitely cause activity B, but I'm displeased with activity B, or I don't care about the fact that B is going to take place, it is perfectly permissible. One is psik resha usr. It's only usr if I'm pleased with activity B. I'm happy with the fact that activity B is taking place, then it's usr. But if I'm displeased, I'm unhappy with the fact that it's taking place, but what can I do? Or even if I don't care, it is perfectly mutter lechatchil. That is the shita of the Aruch. Moving over to the shita of Tosfos, Tosfos' shita is like this, that in kol haTorah kula, in all other areas except for the Isra of Shabbos, Hilcha Shabbos, it is asr mida araisa. To do a psik resha delo nichle is asr deraisa. I'm going to do activity A. That's definitely going to cause activity B. Even though I'm displeased with activity B, it is asr mida araisa. That is the halacha in kol haTorah kula. But on Shabbos, it's going to be a variation. On Shabbos, it's going to be asr derabanan. A psik resha delo nichle on Shabbos is only asr derabanan. Because of the concept of malacha, shenitrich lagufa, we've discussed this in the past a few months ago, the idea that when you do a malacha on Shabbos, you have to do it for a certain purpose. If you do it for the wrong purpose, it's only asr midarabanu. Says Tosis that on Shabbos, if I do activity A and it causes activity B, but I don't want activity B to take place, so that's apparently considered to be a wrong purpose. I'm not doing it for the right purpose, and therefore it's only asr midarabanu. So in kol haTorah kula, it's asr deraisa. On Shabbos, it's asr midarabanu. So that's Machlokes and Tosfos versus the Aruch. Is all going to be brought down the halacha lemaisa. Both of the shitas are going to be very much huge players in all the shailas that we analyze. So let's just chazer the machlokas again. According to the Aruch, psik resha delo nichle is perfectly mutter lechatchila. If you don't want the secondary effect, it's mutter. Whereas according to Tosfos, it is asr deraisa in kol haTorah kula. On Shabbos, it's asr midarabanu. And the question is, what's the hezber in this machlokas? What's the conceptual basis for the shita of the Aruch? What's the conceptual basis for the shita of Tosfos? So does anyone want to try to plug in Rav Chanan's chakira? Can you see how that chakira might help us out with this machlokas? Okay, Bill wants me to go by there.
Can we say, according to the first side of the Chakira, where our subconscious knowledge of this thing creates Yisr itself, well, my only subconscious knowledge of that is kind of flavored by the fact that if it has a relevance to me, if it's totally relevant to me, it's one could say it's removed from my subconscious perspective. On the second side, similarly, while you're kind of making a included in A is B when it's inevitable, one caveat to that could be when it's nichale. When it's not nichale, then it no longer carries that one-to-one relationship.
Okay, so let's build, and well, we can talk it out. I would say over zingers, but I guess on Zoom we can't really send it to you. Let's talk it out. So Lachana wants to say like this: that going to the first time the chakira, first time was to say, that has psik resha delo nichle work, that when I do activity A, since I'm aware that B is definitely going to take place, there's some kind of subconscious kavana on activity B, a certain deep down acceptance and intention on activity B. So says Rav Chanan, that's all fine and well if you're pleased with activity B. If you're happy with the fact that B is taking place, so then we can ascertain that deep down you're really having a kavana on B. Who are you lying to? If A always causes B, and you're happy that B is taking place, then deep down you're having a certain type of kavana on B. But if you're displeased with the fact that B is taking place, you're not happy with it, so then maybe we shouldn't assert that you're having the subliminal kavana on activity B. You're really not. You don't want it to take place. You have no choice. You have to do activity A, but we're not going to claim you're having kavana on B. So Rukhana wants to say that that's the shot behind the sheet of the Aruch. The Aruch who holds that Psik Resha on Nichla is Mutter is going to hold like the first time the Chakira. That the reason Psik Resha is Aser, because we ascertain that if you are aware that A always causes B, you're having a subconscious intention on B. And says Rukhana, and that's all true if you want activity B. If you're pleased with it, so then we're going to start being a psychologist and claiming that you're really having Kavana. But if you're really displeased with activity B, so then we're not going to claim that you're having a subliminal intent on act B. So that's Levi, the first side in the Chakira. The second side in the Chakira is to say that really, how do we generate Kavana on B? Not because your awareness on A causes a Kavana on B, but because since A always causes B in Metzias, so B is included in A. A and B are the same activity, they're synonyms. If that's the case, if that's why Psik Resha is Aser, so who cares if it's Nichalei or if it's Lo Nichalei? Whether you like it or not, either way, A always causes B. A equals B. When I have Kavana on A, that's going to be a Kavana on B. Even if I'm displeased with B, if A always causes B and A equals B, then Kavana on A is Kavana on B. So according to the second side, if we're not getting into psychology, we're just doing a halachic analysis of the activities. If A and B are the same act and you have Kavana on A, well, like it or not, you have Kavana on B because they're the same activity. So Ruchana wants to claim that that's the shot on the sheets of Tosfos. Tosfos holds Psik Resha, Lenichalei, Aser, Deraisa, elsewhere, except for on Shabbos, is going to hold like the second side, that there's a fusion of the two activities. Because A always causes B, that defines them as the very same act. So who cares if the guy wants it or not? Whether you want it or not, they're the same act, because they always cause each other. And therefore, Kavana on A is Kavana on B, just for short on time. Okay, fine. So with that, we've concluded the basic groundwork in the sugya of Psik Resha. And I just want to quickly spend time going through one or two quick shilas now in the postgame, the last 6 minutes. So shila number one that comes up is the shila of having a kiddush outdoors on Shabbos. What is the halacha in terms of having a kiddush outdoors on Shabbos? So what's the issue? So let's go through, spend a few moments going through the primary sources on the issue, and then we'll see how it plays out in the postgame. So we begin with a Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch brings down that there's an iser to water any vegetation on Shabbos. If you pour water onto plants on Shabbos, so that is aser. And actually multiple malachos involved, but the simplest malacha we could throw out is malacha zoraya. Anytime you promote plant growth, so that fits under malacha zoraya, that's aser to do on Shabbos. So that's the din in Shulchan Aruch. Comes along the Ramah, and he presents a chumrah. Says the Ramah, based on this halacha, a person should not eat outdoors on Shabbos. That a person shouldn't eat outdoors on Shabbos if you're going to be drinking, lest you come to pour water on the plants. So says the Ramah, it is aser to eat outdoors on Shabbos. That's the minhag, because we want to avoid the possibility of pouring water or pouring liquid onto plants. So that is the din in the Ramah. Yeah. Good question. So let's, Mitch Hashem, let's get there. So let's get there. Dov is pushing what the exact issue was. Let's just try and get there quickly. But that's what the Ramah says. We're learning it together here. Fine. Now, the big question that comes up in the primary postgame in the Nosei Kalim is, where does this Chumrah of the Ramah apply? When the Ramah said this Chumrah, not to eat outdoors, is he only talking about in your own yard? Or is he even talking about in your friend's yard? So we have in this Machlok between the Magen Avraham versus Rov Poskim. The Magen Avraham on the spot brings down that according to some, it's perfectly permissible to eat in somebody else's yard. The Ramah's Chumrah is only in your own yard. Why would the Ramah's Chumrah only be in your own yard, not in somebody else's yard? Because in somebody else's yard, it's going to be a Psik Resha Dolo Nichalei. Now listen, I don't care about the fact that this guy's plants are being watered. Then no offense to you, but I'm just eating. And if I accidentally spill, let's say, not doing it for Kavana, if I accidentally spill outside, the fact that it's going to be watering the plants is a secondary effect. I'm not having Kavana for it. It's Psik Resha Dolo Nichalei. According to the Aruch, that's permissible.
So they derive Kiddush outdoors in a shul.
Yes. Okay. So that could be that's a Geshmak point. Okay. So Mr. Verstenig is making Geshmak point. Let's see if we can get there. But yeah. So that is the Shita the Magen Avraham that it could be permissible in somebody else's yard, which would then be like a Kiddush and Shul, because I don't care about the fact that I love the Shul, but the fact that the petunias are growing or not doesn't really Okay. So these are our points to discuss. Let's just kind of finish up. Yeah. Good. So the Magen Avraham, he's bringing down the Aruch LaHalacha here and saying, therefore, it will be permissible. Says the Mishnah Berurah that Rov Poskim don't paskin like the Aruch. And since Rov Poskim don't paskin like the Aruch, therefore, it's the Chumrah of the Ramah applies not only in your own yard, even applies in your friend's yard. Even though it's a Psik Reisha Lo Nichalei, that if you spill water by accident, let's say, you're not having Kavana for the secondary effect of watering the plants, but Psik Reisha Lo Nichalei is Aser like Tosfos. So we see that our machlokas aposkim, our machlokas in today's sugya, is playing out in this shaila. Where does the chumrah of the Ramah apply? When the Ramah said not to eat outdoors, is that limited to your yard? But in somebody else's yard, it's a psik reisha lo nichalei. Anyways, it's permissible. That's what the Magen Avraham says. Whereas Mishnah Berurah says the Rov Poskim argued on the Magen Avraham, they're not willing to rely on the Aruch, and therefore this is going to be prohibited even in somebody else's yard. So those are the primary sources on the issue of eating outdoors. And now the question becomes, now that we learned up the Nosei Kalim, so is there an issue with eating outdoors at a Kiddush? Or another variant Shiloh would be, what about having a sukkah on the yard? Person doesn't have any cement in his backyard. He wants to put a sukkah on the grass. Is there a problem with putting a sukkah on the grass? What's the issue? The Chumrah of the Ramah. The Ramah is a Chumrah that you're not supposed to eat outdoors. If you eat on a sukkah on the grass, you're eating outdoors. Should that be problematic? So this is a Shiloh. What is it? Okay, so someone's like, so this is the shaila that comes up in the post game. What is that? Fine. Especially with COVID now, it's a much bigger issue. Fine. So we have on this machlokes between the Nishma Shabbos versus the Simcha Benim Kohen. The Nishma Shabbos is machmir on the shaila. He's machmir on eating outdoors. He feels that there should be a problem based on the primary sources to eat outdoors. He says that a kiddush should not be held outdoors because of this issue. He says that when it comes to a sukkah, a person should line something on the floor of the sukkah to cover the grass because of the chumrah of the Ramah. That's the shita of the Nishma Shabbos. Whereas Rav Simcha Benim Kohen argues, he holds that it's perfectly fine to eat outdoors on a sukkah or in a kiddush, because he says if you look at the primary sources, the real concern of the primary sources he feels doesn't apply nowadays. Because the original sources, if you look it up, the shitas that the Ramah is quoting, they tell us why is it, as though it was pressing, why is it that you're not supposed to eat outdoors according to the Ramah? What's the exact concern? The concern is that maybe either A, you're going to wash outside, like for a motzi, you'll wash over the vegetation, or maybe you're going to clean out your dishes outside. That was the original concern in the original sources, says Rav Simcha Benim Kohen. And so he says that that's not going to apply nowadays, that nowadays when we eat outside in a kiddush, we're not washing our hands outside, you always wash indoors, and then you go outside, or you have a washing station, you're not washing over the grass, and no one's washing their dishes outside, you usually use a disposable stuff at the kiddush, and therefore he says that the concerns do not apply and is perfectly permissible. I think that's the accepted minhag. I don't think anyone's mocking on this issue. Okay, so Mr. Ristin is asking, what if there would be a real place outside? I still don't think people wash their dishes outside. So I think the minhag is to be make on the shaila. So the minhag is to be make on the shaila, but it's just the geshmak to see how our issue plays out in the poskim. Fine. So with that, So Ellie's asking a question. What if the yard was already watered? Would that be helpful? So the truth of the matter is that it is absolutely helpful that this issue comes up in some situations. Let's say you want to take a schlock. Let's say you have a schlock that has water on it from the rain. And let's say I want to take off my schlock off the sukkah, the issue being that the water is not going to go onto the grass. So is that permissible? So one of the big criteria is that if it's right after the rain, then it would be permissible because you're not adding any more water to the grass. So Ellie's point is absolutely true la halacha. But yeah, if the grass is mamish saturated right now, adding more water would technically be perfectly permissible. So just to quickly summarize, we had three parts of today's shiur. Part one, we laid out the basic heter of davar she'en miskavein. We pass like Rabbi Shimon. You can always do activity A if it may cause activity B of iser because I'm not having kavana. And we saw the interesting application to giving a shot on Shabbos, an injection to a chol she'en bo sakana or to a parent on Shabbos is very much connected to this heter of davar she'en miskavein. That was part one. Part two, we discussed the big qualification of psik reisha, that if it's inevitable, then you have kavana, then it's aser. And we saw Rabbi Chanan's Chakira as to why is a psik reisha asur? Is it because there's a subliminal intent on activity B, or because when A causes B, so A equals B, and so kavana on A is kavana on B, and he wants to claim that nafkamina is a psik reisha lo nichalei. If I'm not pleased with a secondary result, so is that going to be permissible or not? And we just pointed out in part three, just the shayla poskim, a very fascinating issue of eating a kiddush outdoors. It's not pashut at all from the original sources that it should be mutter. Halachalize, it is going to be permissible, but it's just geshmak to see the process and see how these posts can play out. Lala. Okay, so Shkayach, thank you very much for joining us. And okay, Shkayach, I'm a wonderful Shabbos. Yeah, thank you, Daniel.
Yeah, thank you. Can I call you for a question in a few minutes?
Yeah, I just got that Marav, though.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'll call you in a few minutes.
Okay, Shkayach.
After Marav.
Yeah, Shkayach. Perfect, thanks.